Okay, we're going to reconvene back into open session. Mr. Crawford, would you please lead us in the pledge? Okay, our new student representative to the board's not with us tonight, so we'll move right into our recognitions. We're going to skip the school report tonight because Mr. Preston's out sick, and our A-plus community partner and our A-plus employees will bring those back next time when Mr. Preston can be here. But we do still have one recognition. Would the board please step down front?
If I could have Margie Markle come stand here while I read this to you, I would love to have her stand right here next to me. I have a few words that I've prepared, and then we have a plaque to present you with. So, Margie Markle has been a fixture of the Marysville Joint Unified School District Board of Trustees since December 1992. During her 20-year tenure, she presided over the district with 18 different distinguished members of the board. They are, in alphabetical order, no, I'm not going to ask you to tell me, but let me run down the list. It's quite impressive. Jeff Boom, 2002 to present. Charlie Center, 1992 to 98. Jerry Christensen, 92 to 94. Frank Crawford, 2010 to present. Cheryl Kozad, 1994 to 96. Roland D'Arcy, 1992 to 2002. Dean Ellison, 2000 to 2004. Sandy Fondley, 1998 to 2010. Jim Fleury, 2004 to present. George McGrew, 1992 to 98. Phil Miller, 2010 to present. Don Morris, 1992 to 96. Bernie Rex, 2004 to present, and the list goes on. Chris Seal, 1998 to 2002. Rich Sebo, 2002 to 2010. Cheryl Webb Fisher, 1996 to 2004. And Buck Weckman, 1992 to 2000. Margie also served two different terms as president of the board, from 1994 to 1997. And again in 2000 to 2004, for a total of 5 years. Can you tell I dusted off the archives? I've been thumbing through old board meeting minutes. Because the next number is pretty impressive, too. Of the 596 scheduled board meetings in 20 years, Margie was present and accounted for 546. That's an impressive 92% attendance rate. It also is noteworthy to mention that she worked with three different superintendents, Peter Pillsbury, Mark Liebman, and me. Of the 596 meetings, you sat alongside Pete Pillsbury for 173 meetings, Mark Liebman for 212, and Gay Todd for 211 meetings. Margie holds the record of the longest-running tenure on the MJUSD Board of Trustees. She successfully ran for office 5 different times and was narrowly defeated in her 6th election by only 83 votes out of the 3,277 votes cast. Glenn Harris is the only current board member to rival Margie's years of dedication. Glenn is entering his 5th term, or 17th year, on the board. Others who have come close to Margie's record are Roland D'Arcy with 15 years, Charlie Center, 13, and Sandy Fondley, 12 years. Stating the statistics is pretty easy. It's the immeasurable impact of her serving on the board for the past 20 years that is beyond words. I believe the recipe for Margie's enduring success has always been her ability to seek first to understand and always add a heaping measure of compassion and empathy to any situation. There has always been a pinch of humor and a dollop of grandmotherly advice to students facing the board when they've made a bad decision. She is ever the optimist when sharing with students that even the darkest hour has a silver lining. Margie is known for telling students that even an expulsion from school is an opportunity to right the wrongs of their past decisions. She has always encouraged students to make the most of this unplanned change of venue and tells them she looks forward to being at their graduation and will be waiting to shake their hand as they cross the stage to receive their diploma. On a personal note, I will always remember with great fondness our president of the board and superintendent meetings for coffee at the Eagle's Nest. I was new at this job, and you were the calming force as we discussed the matters of the district each week. Your words of wisdom represented years of MJUSD accomplishments and challenges combined. You always kept us steered on a steady course and helped keep things in perspective. Sometimes we dined alone, and sometimes we were joined by two sleepy grandchildren, Evan and Allison, who are here tonight, as they quietly ate their breakfast before you drove them to school. It goes without saying you have made a significant impact on the community, district, staff, students, and our schools. Your name adorns our latest facilities and will forever be in the hearts of those who have known you and have had the privilege of calling you their friend. You will be missed. And if I just didn't have enough to say, I'm going to add one more thing. I'm going to read you her plaque, which reads, "In recognition and appreciation for representing Trustee Area Number 2 in the Marysville Joint Unified School District, December 1992 to December 2012. Your willingness to serve on the Board of Trustees for the Marysville Joint Unified School District for the past 20 years, along with your dedication and commitment to our students, staff, and community, is an unparalleled accomplishment. Although your presence on the board will be missed by all, the legacy of all you helped MJUSD to accomplish during your tenure on the board will not soon be forgotten."
I just want to thank you for those kind words. I had no idea all those statistics, to be frank with you. When I first ran for the board, my husband had just died. Lyndhurst had happened. And people from my district came to me and said, "We'd like you to run for the board." And I thought, you know, I think that's something I should do. For several reasons. One was I needed to let my children, Michael, and my daughter, Betsy, who's here tonight, and Justin, the father of my grandchildren, to know that I was okay and that I was going to move forward. But I was a teacher, and I taught at Notre Dame for many, many years, 20, 24, 25 years. And I've always worked with children. And the honor of being able to be within the district, to be a board member of this district, became very important to me. I really thought I'd only go one term. I had no clue I would go five. And I am very proud of my tenure on the board. I am very proud of the accomplishments. I was talking to Michelle a few minutes ago, and you know, the district has changed. It's changed drastically. It goes forward. It's a wonderful district. It's a team. Tony, if I may call you that, I've never met you, and I say hello and I say welcome to Marysville Joint Unified School District. This is a wonderful board. This is a wonderful district. And I was so impressed when I read in the newspaper article that you wanted to make a good district, an even better district. And that's such a good attitude to come on the board with, because that's what it's all about, is working for the betterment of the children. And I've been around so many people that I admire. I've learned so much. I've learned so much from Gay. Gay is a wonderful superintendent. We are so very fortunate to have her. And I will be there for anybody who needs me, either in the district, you guys, you all. I miss you. But you know what? This district's going forward in a very positive way, and I'm very proud to have been a part of it.
Okay, we're going to move on to a presentation from Crow and Horwath, our independent audit report.
Good evening, Superintendent Todd and members of the board. Wow, that's loud. My name is Steve Westcoat. I'm with Crowell Horwath, and I've made this presentation a few times in the past, but I wanted to talk with you briefly about the results of the audit and the audit process and, of course, the audit report that you have in front of you. As you may be aware, the audit involves three areas. There's an audit of the district's financial statements. There's a component of the audit that relates to compliance with certain state laws and regulations. The state of California has an audit guide that we're required to follow. And there's a component of the audit that deals with your compliance with federal laws and regulations because you receive federal money. And, of course, the federal government has to have their own audit requirements as well. So the document that we refer to as the audit report includes the district's financial statements. There's a section in the front that's called the management's discussion and analysis, which is district management's narrative description of the financial statements. It's a good place to go if you don't want to spend a lot of time looking at numbers. If you go to that section, you can read about the financial situation with respect to the district. The numbers in that tie back directly to all of the numbers that are in the financial statements. There's a section in the report called Notes to the Financial Statements, and for each of the significant numbers in the front part of the financial statements, the note will explain or give more detail about specific aspects of certain accounts, like cash and fixed assets and long-term debt, things like that. There's another section that is referred to as supplementary information. Schedules that are required to be included either because of auditing standards or accounting standards, rather, state standards or federal standards. So that's a section towards the back. And at the very back of the report, a section called Findings and Recommendations, where we report to you anything that came out as a result of the audit. There are also four auditors' reports that are included in this package that deal with the different aspects of the audit. And I'd like to just briefly touch on each of those four auditors' reports with you. The first one is just inside the table of contents. It's about three or four pages back. It's called Independent Auditor's Report. And that is our report on the district's financial statements. And the key part of that report is the third paragraph down, the one that starts off with, in our opinion. It says, in our opinion, the financial statements present fairly the financial condition of the district. It's called an unqualified opinion, and that's the sort of opinion that you want to hear from your auditor. And it says just that, that the financial statements do present fairly the financial condition of the district. Along with that, there's a page towards the back of the report that's somewhat blank. It's a schedule that reconciles the unaudited actuals to the audit report. As we audit the, when we audit the financial statements, we really start with the unaudited actuals that you received back in probably September. And that's what ends up in the audit report. If we have any audit adjustments, we're required to show that schedule that reconciles the financial statements that you're being presented with now to the unaudited actuals that were submitted to the state. And as you notice, that page back there was blank. That means there were no audit adjustments, which is always a positive thing. There is a report on compliance with state laws and regulations that begins on page 62. As I mentioned, the state of California has an audit guide. It describes for us the specific compliance areas that we're required to look at. Most of those have to do with apportionment-related things like attendance, but over the last several years, we're seeing more and more items that are going in there that really don't have anything to do with apportionment, but have to do with other aspects of the law. And so we're required to report to you on the fact that we've audited the things that are included in the audit guide. In some cases, we don't do the steps that are in the audit guide, and that's simply because they don't apply to the district. But we're required to report them out or list them in this report anyway. The key part of this report is towards the bottom of page 63. It's the one paragraph that starts, the second one up from the bottom that says, in our opinion, the district complied in all material respects with all of the requirements that we were required to audit that were in the audit guide. So, again, that's a very positive result to the audit. The audit on compliance with federal laws and regulations begins on page 66. The federal government, as I mentioned, has their own audit requirements. Those are contained in the Office of Management and Budget, Circular A-133. And there's actually two parts to this process. One is to look at your general administrative controls over federal programs. The other one is to select certain of your programs. Typically, the larger programs are the ones that the federal government deems to be higher risk. For example, the Recovery Act money is always deemed to be high risk. And so we go through a process that the federal government lays out for us to identify the programs that we test. And then we have to document and test your specific program compliance with those programs. And the key part of this report is about halfway down on page 66. Again, it starts off with, in our opinion. In our opinion, the district complied in all material respects with the compliance requirements related to the federal programs that you administer. So again, another positive result from that part of the audit. The fourth opinion is on page 64 and 65, and that's a part of all three of these. Because we're doing an audit in accordance with government auditing standards, those standards require us to also report to you anything we see in respect to internal controls. So this is a report on the internal control environment of the district. This one's worded a little differently. You won't find a paragraph in there that says, in our opinion, because we're not giving you an opinion about internal controls, but rather we're required to report to you if we find anything. And really what this report says, we didn't find anything wrong with your system of internal controls. So it's a different way of saying sort of the same thing, but because we're not doing a specific audit of your internal controls, rather we're doing an evaluation of internal controls to help us with the audit. We didn't identify any internal control problems that we were required to report to you. So again, that's a positive result. So all four of those reports in those three areas that we talked about all have a very positive result as a result of the audit to report to the district. The back part of the audit report, I know, is where experienced board members like to go first when you get the audit report. That's again where if we had any findings in any of those three areas, we would report those to you. And what you see beginning on about page 69 are three blank pages. We had no findings related to internal controls. We had no findings related to state compliance. We had no findings related to federal compliance. And equally important, I think, as on the last couple of pages, we also follow up on the findings from the prior year. All of the issues that were noted in the prior year audit were corrected by the district, and we had no repeat issues in the current year. So those are all positive results, really, as a result of the audit. And I think really reflect positively on the quality of the staff that you have here at the district. Not only in the business office, you know, Mark gets the credit, and Mark and his staff for the financial statement part of it, but so much of this audit also involves as I mentioned, state compliance and federal compliance. It requires us to talk to a lot of different people, requires us to go out to school sites and test attendance and all sorts of different areas. And so the results here really reflect on the quality of district staff, and so I want to express our appreciation from the firm to you of our thanks for your staff and the work that they do throughout the year that gets the results that you see here today. With that, I know you have a very busy agenda, and I wanted to sort of stop it right there, but ask you, if you have any questions of me about either the audit process or the audit report, I'd be more than happy to answer them for you.
Any questions? I don't have any questions, just a comment, quick comment. It's kind of amazing there's no findings, no attendance, ASB funds, nothing. I don't think that probably, I don't know, and does that happen very often?
It does not happen very often, to be honest with you.
I think on the 12 years that I've been, or on the 11 years I've been on the board, this is the first time I've seen it. And so we really commend Mr. Allgaier's office, Nancy Henshaw, who has since retired. She's responsible for a lot of this, so thank you to her also. And the school staff, yes, all the school staffs, because this is incredible that there was absolutely no findings from any of the sites. So is there any questions about anything on the audit? No questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, comments from board members, Mr. Miller? Mr. Rex?
Just note that the search for talent, which is put on by the Exchange Club in cooperation with Anna McKinney School, is open to all students in the district. There's three different categories, a primary division, a junior division, and a senior division. And I'm hoping that I can get all the applications out to all the schools very shortly, and that'll be in March 22nd, the actual contest.
Mr. Fleury?
I've got four things. Number one, Edgewater made the newspaper on Thursday, which was Tim Kelly's class from the adult ed. And I went out there when I saw that and saw the projects the kids did, and I was amazed that fourth graders did that, spent about a couple hours in the classroom. And they were just amazed at the things they're learning with Mr. Kelly, and it just goes to show, if you're good, you're good. And I saw that he was giving the lessons to the kids, and they just are amazing what they were learning. Number two, I'd sent Gay an email about the Lyndhurst fence, the issue at Lyndhurst, and you can discuss that later. Okay. About a program that got closed because of a fence over there between Johnson Park and Lyndhurst, and there were several concerns. Number three, this afternoon when I got ready to leave, and this is a question from Romero, I got a call from Lyndhurst, and they wanted to know, they're hiring a custodian, and why is that nobody from Lyndhurst is on the interview panel as in the past? I got a call from Lyndhurst. They want to know why no one at the school site is involved in the hiring of a custodian, being it's going to be on that site.
There's a custodial supervisor in the district. He's a district-wide employee charged with supervising custodians. That person is better able to assess the skill level that we need at each individual site. Principals don't have the time. They typically move rather quickly, hastily through that process. We will likely have a panel of two or three participating administrators to make those kinds of hiring decisions and bring forth a recommendation to the board in the future. If we felt that the administrators had ample amount of time to adequately supervise these individuals, these employees, throughout the day, throughout the night, which doesn't happen, then we're more likely to get a better quality employee. Given that our track record hasn't represented that, a shift in procedures is taking place.
Okay, and they know that at the school site. Okay, so that then the employee, because the employee that called me said they were gonna, their principal said it was all right to call and ask. So, also the last thing is, and I know Gay and I talked about this, two meetings ago it was asked to be placed about bringing classified positions on, and you explained to me why that you chose to take that off, and I feel that when that happens, when a board has a question like that, it should have been brought for us to discuss and decide. I know that what you were saying, and but I think when a board member had asked for that to be placed on, it should have been placed for a discussion and then for us to decide. Well, that's all I have.
Okay, Mr. Harris.
Well, I'm sorry Margie's gone. She was on the board when I came. She saw a lot of changes, and she gave a lot of good advice. And she, some of it you asked for, some of it you didn't, but she listened to it. And Bernie's right. A hug from Margie kind of settled everything down sometimes. But I know whatever she intends to do in the future, she's going to do a great job at it, because for 20 years she served the community and she served the people that she represented. And she served them with a lot of heart and a lot of thought.
Mr. Crawford.
Yes, I've been asked many times why, as I enter my 40th year with the company, why I would want to be a school board member and go through the headaches and the trials and tribulations. Well, there's a lot of reasons. Probably the biggest, I was always disappointed when colleagues would have children attend schools outside the district when they lived in the district. I'm proud to say both my children graduated from Marysville schools, and I'm very happy to say my granddaughter just enrolled in Kynock Elementary. And it just, so those are the reasons, yeah. Put up with the headaches and some of the other things. And I missed last meeting it, but I had a chance to find out what true friendship is, and he's a board member, Mr. Glenn Harris, who stood by my side for the 3 days when I went through this. And I just wanted to thank him tonight, not embarrass him. And we go back a long time. We were roommates in college, but I won't tell you about that. Anyhow, I will miss Margie. I wish she hadn't left so quick, because I had some things I wanted to say to her, but thank you very much, and Happy New Year, belatedly.
Mr. Danable.
I am the person, I guess, that has caused all this, these sentimental feelings tonight regarding Margie. I want everybody to know that I feel honored, of course, to be sitting in her chair. I've also enjoyed, I see some faces that I've had an opportunity to actually see in action this week as I visited some schools in our district. And when you actually get to see the plan in action, it is quite the sight to behold. I also, Friday night, went down to the Many Stars, Many Nations that was sponsored by the Marysville Indian Education Program here. It was a great opportunity to learn some things that I, of course, didn't know, and I was shocked at the turnout. I would like to encourage everybody to participate in these types of events that are being held here in our district. It's how these programs will grow. It gives us an idea of how much you guys want to see this stuff. It makes it easier for us to support. Thank you.
Welcome aboard.
Okay, we'll move on to opportunity for employee organizations to address the board. Marysville Unified Teachers Association.
Good evening, gentlemen. Ladies, still a lady up here, I guess. Margie's gone now. I know it's going to be kind of different. I can remember when she used to work with the Junior Giants, and she took my kids down to Giants games. So, you know, the lady has definitely been a force in this community, and she will be missed. I want to talk to you guys here a little bit about what I feel was a slap in the face to my members. In December, roughly 10 of our members met with you and your attorney in a session asking for relief with our health care costs. Some of our members had their hearts out on their sleeves. I mean, there was tears, there was quite a bit of angst amongst them. After that meeting, we received word from the assistant superintendent that he did not have the authority to bargain for this. I want you to know that's why we were there, is for you to give him that authority. And he didn't have it. We said we were going to file for impasse, which we did, which was turned down by the state. The district said that we should be able to settle this in January. So we're hoping that that is the case. The governor's budget, as you're going to find out here a little later, contains zero mid-year cuts this year. A projected funded COLA next year, along with an increase in ADA. With that in mind, I am hoping that you will give your bargaining team the authority to bargain with our bargaining team for significant ongoing relief for our health care costs. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. White. Operating Engineers Local Union 3, CSEA 326-648, Association of Management and Confidential Employees, Supervisory Unit. Okay, public comments or no public comment cards, so we'll move on to the superintendent's report.
Thank you. Last week was our first week back after our 3-week break, and certainly it was a very busy week for evening meetings. On Wednesday the 16th, we had a school safety meeting here in this building, actually this room, and I want to thank Jeff Boom, Bernie Rex, Glenn Harris, Jim Fleury, and Tony Danimal who were able to be here. I know the rest of you were here in spirit. We felt it. We also had Marysville Police Department Sergeant Chris Sachs and Yuba County Sheriff's Department Lieutenant Brandon Barnes, along with the Sheriff Stephen Durfer, who were here to help facilitate and to answer questions in light of some recent tragedies. How are we keeping our schools safe? What are we doing? And I think the key component that came out of that whole discussion was they want to be proactive. We all want to be proactive in making sure that our students, staff, and community as a whole are safe on our campuses. As such, Jolie has entered into discussions with Placer County Office of Education. They currently have a grant, and they want to work with some of our schools. Actually, we have 5 schools that will be taking teams to participate in this positive behavioral interventions and support training. Johnson Park, Linda, Yuba Gardens, Cedar Lane, and Lyndhurst will be participating. It's going to be happening very soon, which will give them skills and strategies for dealing with some of our most at-risk youth and students who are exhibiting areas of distress so that we are able to be more proactive in our approach. So we're looking forward to that, and that is at no cost to the district. It's through their grant, so we're very appreciative of the fact that they've included us in their program. On Thursday, we had our district advisory committee at Johnson Park Elementary School, and along with the laundry list of things we share with parents, Brian Williams was there to talk about technology in our schools and where we're headed, and it's pretty amazing what we are embarking upon. And, you know, we used to have lots of rules and regulations about computer use and when you could use it and what types of computers you can use. And Brian said, you know what, those days are pretty much gone now that we have smartphones and iPads and other types of technology readily available. So he is now researching and working with other school districts about how they're bringing that technology so it's at the students' fingertips with the technology they already have at their disposal. So it was interesting to see the kinds of things. We will still continue to have certain firewalls and protections, but this is now a whole new age when we are going to be working with schools. He's working with a group from each and every site to talk about technology needs and how we move forward and how we incorporate the kinds of technology our kids currently have available to them, not just at school but at home as well. This week is also going to be a little busy. Starting tomorrow night, the Calusa Sutter Yuba Administrator of the Year dinner is going to take place. And Mark has agreed again this year, since it's going to be out at the Calusa Casino Event Center, to drive a van. So board members who have said yes, they were going to be attending. If you want to catch a ride with Mark, let us know. He'll be meeting us at the back door by my office at 5 o'clock, and we'll provide a little shuttle service to and from the district office. So if you don't want to drive, there is a van that's going to be taking us there. Can I talk about a retirement party that's happening Friday? Well, no, it's not you, and it's not me. It is a surprise party, and I forgot to check with Mark beforehand, so I didn't want to say something and later say, ooh, I shouldn't have mentioned it. But Mary Driscoll is retiring. And at 2 o'clock on Friday, up in her office, there's going to be a little celebration of her time here with the district. And if you're available, we'd love to have you come. If you can let us know, then we can let them know. Don't tell Mary. Call my office. Let Lisa know. And we'll let them know to count you in for the goodies that I'm sure will be in great abundance up there. Other upcoming events for you to mark on your calendar, the Academic Decathlon will be happening on Saturday, February 2nd at Marysville High School. And the Marysville Joint Unified School District annual Spelling Bee will be happening on Wednesday the 27th at 5:30 at Marysville South Auditorium. And there's a flyer here for you to grab and toss in your calendar so you've got that to look at. It's also time, I know it's hard to believe, but for the board to give me the nod or not as to whether you would like to sponsor an ad in the Marysville High School yearbook. The cost is $150 for a half-page ad, and we have done this now for a number of years. But just wanted to make sure that that is still something that the board wants to do.
And lenders, too?
They've not approached us. I think if they approach us, then certainly we should do it. But we extended that offer to them last year, and I don't believe they took us up on it. No, not for a long time. So if you have a connection with Lyndhurst, you might talk to the yearbook teacher and say, give Gay a call, and we'll be happy to include them in that. Anyone here wish for us not to do it? Okay, so then I will go ahead and let them know that, yes, we will do that again this year as well. Jim mentioned that there's been a little bit of a, I would use the word flurry, but Mr. Flurry, I'm not sure
that's fine.
Where I want to go with it, about the Lyndhurst High School cadet tutoring program and Johnson Park. Lyndhurst loves the program. Johnson Park loves the program. The issue has been the route that students must take to travel to and from Johnson Park. We've looked at a couple of different ways to get there. The one that's currently available is a much longer path to get there, and parents are concerned about the supervision of their students as they're walking to and from. It happens throughout the day. It's a multiple period offering. The high school students do go over and they work as literacy tutors with the elementary kids. There are about 16 kids that currently participate in it. Because of the issues with the route of travel, the program has been discontinued. Now, having spoken with Mr. Eckert, it's not a problem to reinstate it if we can find a way that is more suitable for students to get to and from Johnson Park. There have been issues in the past with opening the Lever Avenue gate. The residents there have been very vocal about not wanting students to walk up and down that street. We are talking about a handful of kids, but certainly when you open the gate, there are other kids who may come and go as well. I just need direction from the board. If you are comfortable opening Lever Avenue, that does certainly allow them to go that way. They can go through the tennis courts, but they have to walk across the lawn, and in inclement weather, that's a bit more problematic. So I just need to know what you're willing to support, or if we just let the program...
What time of day is it, did you say?
It's pretty much throughout the day, primarily morning, but it is multiple periods. So it's not just like first period or second period.
Couldn't we have security open the walk-through gate on Lever, and then...
I think there's been concerns that there's just not enough coverage to do that with everything else they're doing as far as patrolling Lyndhurst, so someone to be there to open and shut the gate.
Don't they have someone at the front almost all the time?
One would think that's it,
yeah.
But I've been...
They have somebody at the front almost all the time.
But it's been problematic, and they have not been able to adequately cover it.
You can't, Mr. Harris said, you can't lock it up after they go through and unlock it?
Oh, sure. They just don't. According to both sites' administration, they don't have the resources to cover that on a daily basis for multiple periods. It's not like there's someone just sitting at the front.
I've been out there and seen it. I live in Johnson Park. And I have seen the kids going to school and coming from school. And I don't see a problem with opening the gate on Lever, personally. You get kids that, like you say, go in and out, and they're loud and so forth and so on. I get that where I live. But you have to understand the kids.
They are the students of the community.
And from what I understand, it's one grumpy person, so to speak, that has complained about it over there. And I wouldn't see a problem... Open it. I see the kids that go down Lever to catch the public transportation all the time. I see them in the park at Johnson Park Park, and they're kids. The one guy that is complaining, he has to understand it that they are kids and they will do stupid things.
Dr. Todd, what if we open that gate when the first group left in the morning and after this last group leaves or comes back in the afternoon, lock it back so that the students aren't using it to go to and from school? It would be open throughout the day, but not prior to school and after school.
And absolutely, that's a great solution. I will share with you, it is a very vocal group, and it is a handful, but they will be here at the board meetings unhappy that the gate has been opened at all. So I just need to ascertain as to whether the board is comfortable opening the gate for the morning period, and
we'll be able to stand by that. I think this board's here for the kids, and the high school kids as well as the kids going to Johnson Park. I think they both benefit from what they're doing tremendously.
Yeah.
Without a doubt.
And I think it's an asset. And, yeah, we're going to get complaints, and you'll probably hear about it.
But I don't think we're going to get that much traffic.
I agree.
In and out.
No.
Since 1975, there's been that Lever Gate's been, there's been a handful of people that have been mad about life in general. You're exactly right. It's for the kids. It's a great program. I think the program should be reinstated immediately. And, we should take the heat from a couple of people that are just uncomfortable with teenagers in general. We're in the business of kids and not grumpy with the street.
I agree with that. I think that it's crazy to shut down a program because we can't open a gate. And it's, I don't know how many years it's been there, 4 years, 5 years. But I've heard from the staff and I've heard from the community members, their kids were involved, and I believe mentoring programs are needed within our schools constantly. And we have a successful mentoring program, which I have done for years. It works. I do not think we should close that because of a gate problem. Try to be at peace with people as much as possible, but let them know this is our future generation, and we have to do this. We just can't shut it off because of these kids. They need this program between the high school and the elementary.
I agree with everything I've heard. And I think the simple solution is to reinstate the program, open the gate, and we'll take our slaps if they show up at the meeting.
Thank you. That's the direction I needed and was hoping for. So thank you very much. And then just one last thing. I know when I was going through the archives, I decided some of you may be curious about your attendance record. So I do have everyone's attendance record here. It's very impressive. All above 92%. Even our new board members have made it to both meetings. So
congratulations.
Actually, I didn't make it.
Oh, thank you.
So that would be it for me. Thank you, Mr. Boom.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Todd. We'll move on to approval of minutes. Minutes from the regular board meeting of December 11, 2012. If there are no additions or deletions, is there a motion?
Motion to approve.
Second.
And all those in favor?
Aye.
Six yes, abstentions.
Aye.
One Mr. Crawford abstains. Consent agenda. Would anybody like anything pulled on the consent agenda? Mr. Fleury.
Classified reclassification number 4.
Personnel services. Which one? Classified employment number 4, you said?
Yeah.
Okay. And Mr. Rex?
Educational services number 3 and...
educational services number
3. Number 8, personnel services.
And which one?
Number 8 under personnel services.
Personnel services number 8. Okay, would anybody like anything else pulled? If not, is there a motion?
Motion to approve consent with the items that are pulled.
Is there
a second?
And seconded by Mr. Rex. All those in favor?
Aye.
7 yes. We'll go back to educational services number 3, Mr. Rex.
In reading through this, we're allocating $75,000 for this. And when I went through on page 26, I thought, wow, this is only $15,000. Then I noticed there were 5 different categories there, and basically all on the same day, and they've already occurred.
Yes.
I wanted to make sure, so it was $15,000 per each of the 5 categories.
And
okay.
It was very successful training. The teachers really loved the training, and it goes hand-in-hand with our sheltered immersion program. So it's a way to actually implement a number of the strategies they've learned over the years and certainly now.
Did they send multiple teachers? Or?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
That's what I thought. Okay, I'm done with that one.
I just wanted to clarify that.
What were the number of approximately?
There were a lot. I would say about 120. There were 4 different sessions.
Okay.
One was during our winter break. One was the first week when we got back. And I'm not sure about the other sessions, but they've been very well attended.
Thank you.
And that was covered under STARS funding, I guess.
That was under categorical funding.
Yeah.
That's the training. Thank you. This is why Lisa sits behind me, so she can remind me as I get older. This is the training that I brought to you at the last board meeting and said the training would have already taken place by the time it came before the board. And so you did, in fact, give me the nod to go ahead and do it, even though it hadn't come to you. So thank you, Lisa.
I'll move to approve item number 3 on consent agenda.
Seconded by Mr. Harris. All those in favor?
Aye.
7 yes. Okay, well, personnel services number 4. Mr. Fleury.
I have a couple questions on this. Mark, who made the decision to, was there a hiring panel? How did this happen? Just explain to me how it was.
It was my decision. As you know, Victor Lopez, our director of construction, resigned at the end of December.
to return to private industry. We're not going to replace Victor. And so I put this forward. It was my recommendation.
What experience does Michelle have in the construction side of it?
She has managed some construction projects earlier in the program. It's her experience, quite frankly, is not as extensive as Victor's was, who was a had a four-year degree in construction management. Michelle is a licensed architect, has had experience, and in the department there are still a senior project manager and two assistant project managers who will continue to handle the day-to-day oversight of the projects the same as they would if Victor was still here.
Any other questions?
Now, whenever we build a new building, we have to go to architect. Is that not correct?
Correct.
To send the plans to the state?
Correct.
Now, will she be able to stamp the plans, so to speak, and take care of that without going to outside architect?
Well, yeah, as a licensed architect, one of her primary responsibilities has been to review plans and work with the architects, engineers, and the other parties until the project was ready to, the slang I use is put out on the street, meaning to solicit proposals from general contractors. That's the point that historically it's been turned over to Victor. So all of the design work, planning, working with other public agencies has been Michelle's responsibility for years.
Now she kind of takes a place of a, let's say, an engineer who would, a general engineer who would go around and do the same.
No,
basically the same thing.
She's a district employee. DSA Division of State Architects still requires a outside licensed architect to submit the plans with all the appropriate engineers, depending on the specific project. They also typically have to sign the plans. The architect of record signs the plans, and then that's what's submitted to DSA, and then ultimately approved, which is, again, historically, once DSA approved it and we were ready, then that got turned over to Victor, who handled the construction part. So that part, going forward, would also be Michelle's responsibility.
Thank you. Roughly how many construction projects has she done?
I don't know off the top of my head. We'd have to go back and research that.
Any other questions? Okay, is there a motion? Personnel Services, number 4. Motion by Mr. Miller to approve. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Harris. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? 4 yes and 3 no. Okay, for the record, we had Mr. Danville, Mr. Crawford, and Mr. Fleury. Okay, did you get that, Lisa? Okay, thank you. Okay, under the consent agenda, we also had pulled number 8, Mr. Rex.
Okay, this is also a new position, after school program support specialist. And when I was looking through the qualifications, the job description, it looks like this person does everything except write the grant. And then it says, and it is subject to the supervision of the grant coordinator, but nowhere in this could I find who the grant coordinator is. So that's the first question, is who's the grant coordinator? The second question is, does STARS pick this up as a funding? And the third question is, who did all these jobs before, and why wasn't it good enough?
The program continues to expand, and first and foremost, Ashley Betty is the coordinator of the STARS after school program. And there have been a couple of quasi attempts to broaden the leadership and broaden the supervisory responsibilities, in part because the program has expanded significantly. At one time, the after-school program was also located at the middle schools. There were some participation level issues, not sufficient enough to sustain. Now that program is back at the middle schools, and district-wide, the position, or I should say, the supervisory level of being able to be at all of those places at one time is difficult. And so ultimately, it's trying to create the right position that also provides some more supervisory type, hands-on, day-to-day with both the implementation of the program and supervising employees, which is difficult when you're one person, one grant coordinator, and you've got 18 sites to manage in an afternoon. As you can imagine, you're never there at the right place, right time. Ultimately, it's not an upper-level, mid-management type supervisory position. It's a much more in the trenches, ensuring that the program goals are being followed on a daily basis. Safety of kids is a primary responsibility and, of course, a priority in ensuring that those components are there day in and day out.
Okay, any other questions?
And it is funded out of the ACES program.
I'll move to approve this item.
Okay, motion by Mr. Rex. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Crawford. All those in favor? Opposed? To oppose, Mr. Miller, Mr. Danable. Okay, move on to new business. This is the five-year charter renewal for the Yuba Environmental Science Charter Academy public hearing. So we're going to open that public hearing now. And I have some cards here from different people that want to speak, but the first one I have is from Kathy Smith for a PowerPoint presentation.
We're so excited. The last time we saw you was 2 years ago, and a lot of things have happened since then. So today we come before you for our five-year renewal, and we're asking for another 5 years to continue serving this district. The first thing I want to point out is that next week is the National School Choice Week. So if you look out here, you'll see many of us wearing the yellow school choice scarves, and that's in honor of School Choice Week, which we're hoping you'll also honor. And you already have started to by approving charters in your district to serve the students. The Yes Charter Academy vision is very strong. We hope to serve our students with a special focus on the agricultural and environmental sciences. We have a highly integrated curriculum with math, science, and language arts infused with environmental science and nature experiences. We spend a lot of time outside. We spend a lot of time bringing outside inside. And we spend a lot of time with living creatures, plants and animals. We were very lucky this last week to see a couple of you at our school who got to experience firsthand the worms that were going on in the first and second grade classroom. Community service and environmental stewardship are important to us as a school. We feel that it's very important to give back to the community that we are serving in. And we also feel a responsibility to fellow students and the larger community as a responsibility of the school. And we make that a priority with our Yes Charter Academy. Our highly focused project-based curriculum centers on science. We ask questions, we explore, and we see if we're right or if we're wrong. And if we're wrong, it's okay, because we find out what's the next step. This is a positive public school option for your community. Yes Charter Academy student scientists learn a lot, and here are just four of the things we'd like to highlight. With a garden, animals, and local nature reserves, we're outside all the time exploring our world. We observe and we examine natural phenomena. We look at what's in the news, what happened, what things were going on. Is there a storm? Is there a weather? Is there something we need to look at, and how did that affect us? And how did it affect everyone else? And what can we do? We look through developmentally appropriate lessons and units, including what we adopted for our reading program, which is the Seeds of Science, Roots of Reading, from the Lawrence Hall of Science in UC Berkeley. And we work in multi-age classrooms where everybody has an individualized learning plan. This is some of the data from the Roots of Reading Seeds of Science program. Students who are working with science as they're learning to read tend to achieve much higher than students in traditional programs. This is not from our school, but it's an independent research that was done by the curriculum that we wanted to make sure we shared with you. And this is based on second and third grade students. Seeds of Science also improves writing scores, and you can see here significant achievement from students who are working in Seeds of Science Roots of Reading versus students who are in traditional programs. And this is from third and fourth grade students. And this is the result that we've seen using these programs. When we came before you last time, we had a score of 705. The year after you approved us, we raised to 717. And this last year, we raised to 728. And we plan to continue to raise next year. With our scores rising, our enrollment also is rising. So when we came before you last time, we had just under 80 and above 80 when we did our projections. Following that, we started the year with over 80 students. This year, we started the year and have maintained over 100 students at our school. This is a comparison of our fiscal solvency. When we came before you last time, there was some question of, with 80 students, can we make it? Are we flexible enough? Can we make the adjustments? And the answer is yes, we did. And here is our projection for the next 5 years. You can see the top line is with a growing enrollment because we believe from the last 3 years that we will continue to grow. And this will be the result of that. If we don't grow, we're okay with that too, because as you can see from the bottom line, without growing, we're still fiscally solvent and we'll have more in the bank at the end of each year. And here's some of the faces from the last 2 years. These are the faces of the students who were running for office, who worked in our gardens, who explored the critters and the creatures, who gave presentations and who raised gardens, and the ones that are saying thank you tonight for giving them that 2 years. Yes, Charter Academy is saying yes to a strong infrastructure. Many things that are taken for granted by other schools that are already in place from districts, we didn't have. So we went out and we made them, and we created them with our board, and we made it work. We now have a new bus, and you can see pictures of that on the bottom of the screen. We worked with the contract so that we have a driver that's dedicated and a substitute driver. All of our training and maintenance is taken care of. Our children are safely transported from Yuba City all the way through Marysville, all the way through Challenge, and back down to Dobbins and Oregon House with many stops in between. We have a healthy food program. We use farm fresh ingredients and we cook our own food. And we transport it from the Alcoff Center straight down to Yes Charter Academy. And our students often say it's one of the best things about the day. We now have Charter School Management Corporation, which you met briefly at our last presentation. And they take care of all of our back office services and accounting and payroll. We have PowerSchool, also through Charter School Management Corporation, and that provides our student information systems, similar to the ARES program, but it's our own program. We also have Online Assessment Reporting System, which we call ORS, and that's similar to the EduSoft that the district uses, but it's our own program as well. We've said yes to new traditions. We'll have our first annual Science Fair Expo at the Alcoff Center this year in March, and we'd hope to see all of you there. Our students will be having the whole center decorated with their projects and giving presentations. We'll have some snack and food, and we'll be making it a great family event. We've had two Scholastic Book Fairs in the last 2 years, something that we've never had before. They were great success. In the first one, we used half the proceeds to buy books for our students and put back into the community. Our fifth and sixth grade class went to Shady Creek for the first time. They raised all of the money themselves with help from the community. We have an enrichment program where students are allowed to choose electives, and they go for 5 weeks, and they learn so many different things. It's amazing. We have cooking classes. We have woodworking. We have science. We have explorations. We have art. We even have music. We're fully implemented with the Indian Education Program, and they also take part in our electives so that we have full range of arts and crafts for their students and their culture. We had our first annual Harvest Festival with a Taco Bell that had a line out the front doors, and we had a Kiss the Pig contest, and I was the lucky winner of that. We had our first annual Spring Fair and Barbecue, which was very well attended. We had our first annual Holiday Boutique, where every student was able to bring home gifts for their family. And our first yearbook is in the works. Here are some pictures from our Native American Day celebration. We had some guests from a Maidu tribe from Oroville come out. You can see outdoors there were some flutes and there were some drums. And inside, the students were working with Native American games and different projects. We've said yes to community building all the way around over the last 2 years. We're working with the Lions Club and the war veterans to get them in to see our students and talk to our students and make connections. We've partnered with the Department of Fish and Game and the EC Powell Fly Fishers Club to raise trout and release them into the rivers. The fun part about that is when they come in for the assembly and questions, the first question from the students is, what's the best way to catch the fish? The Redbud Garden Club sponsored the garden equipment and the electronic filming microscope, and I have some pictures to share with you of that. We've collected food for 2 years in a row for the Yuba County Women's Sheriff Posse to deliver families in need over the holidays, and we fed over 300 families. We've networked with local businesses and childcare for Yes Families, and we always donate a portion of our garden to local families. Here you can see some of the pictures from our garden. We had a plant sale. You can see the wheat that we grew and we harvested. You can see how we weighed it and learned measurement. And then we baked bread. We have said yes to sharing and caring. We share our facilities with the North Yuba Children's Orchestra. We have shared fundraisers, community events, and kitchen use with the Dobbins Organ House Improvement Foundation. We share advertising support with the Dobbins Organ House Farmers Market. We've helped to fundraise for family victims of home fire and for the Red Cross to support the natural disaster relief. And we've shared donated resources with the Oregon House Fire Department store to support our local fire department. And here are those images that I promised you. These are student images that the students chose a subject. They put it under the microscope and they took the pictures, and now they're making a report around it. So now I ask you, are you ready? Are you ready to see how high our CST scores will go? Are you ready to see the results of using the Seeds of Science Roots of Reading ourselves? Are you ready to see motivated learners entering high school from our eighth grade classes? And are you ready to see a strong science-based learning community operating in your district, our district? So we're hoping that on March 12, when we see you again, you'll be ready to say yes to Yes Charter Academy for another 5 years. Before everyone comes up to speak, I just want to ask, would everyone who's here in support of Yes Charter Academy please stand? So these are the students and families that are here to support you, to support this school. Thank you.
Okay, I have several other people that want to speak, and I apologize if I don't pronounce your names properly, but I'll do the best I can. Gino Bonfiglio.
All right, if I say a word kind of wrong, I got my braces on.
That's okay. A bunch of us are up here coughing anyway, but... you know, we'll get it.
All right. My name is Gino. I'm a student of Yes Charter Academy. Right when I walked in Yes, I knew it was a school for me. There are a few reasons why I just flat out love the school. Reason one, the food there is made by hand, not stuff like in a package or something. Not many schools do that. Reason two, every Friday we have a thing called enrichment. We pick a thing like drama or beadworking and work on it every Friday. Like drama, you would do a play every 3 weeks or so. Reason 3, garden is a magical place where you learn the structure of plants and nature. Finally, reason 4, science. Science is really cool. We sometimes do experiments. That is the cool part. Like once we poured oil in water and we had to find out how hard it was to get oil out of water. I just want to say thank you for giving me the choice of schools.
Thank you, Gino. Next is Sebastian. I'm not even going to try the last name.
Hello, my name is Sebastian Pulig, and I'm student body president of YES Charter Academy. This is my first year here, but I'm honestly say that YES Charter is a different school that I have attended. The teaching here is more hands-on, and they really think outside the box. This really helps me. Also, the teachers are more understanding and can seem to have more control in the classrooms. The smaller class sizes are than I am used to, and the teachers are able to pay more attention to students and individuals. I get more one-on-one attention, and I feel they go in more into depth which they really makes learning the concept easier. At my old school, bullying was a problem, but not so much here. The teachers look out for us and the need of their students. The less tension around, so there's no fighting. Students gain more confidence and are more involved. We have many open anchors at our school, and every day seems like an adventure. The food here is great, and I've learned the importance of eating healthier. Plus, I enjoy getting my hands dirty and working in the garden. I feel that YES Charter Academy offers so much to so many. I really hope this school is able to help others for years to come, as it helped me. Thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you, Sebastian. Next is Alfred LaCosta,
It's always hard to follow the students. Good evening, Dr. Todd and members of the board. My name is Alfred LaCosta. I'm the 5th, 6th grade teacher at YES Charter, and I have been there for, this is my third year. I arrived at YESCA, as it was called then, in the summer of 2010, during a period of transition. It was a somewhat turbulent time for our school, yet despite the many setbacks at that time, there were those who still believed in the vision and mission of our school. These people, parents, administration, staff, community, school board, and students, welcomed the challenge that lay ahead. And together we became a catalyst of positive change and growth. Again, this is my third year at YES Charter, and I have witnessed the school's evolution firsthand. From the tangible physical improvements of our school to the ones you don't necessarily see, but feel instead. Together, staff, student, and parents have built a strong sense of community, focused not only on teaching academics, but positive character traits such as empathy, honor, and tolerance. Now, I'm sure that these are elements present in other schools as well, but from where we were 3 years ago to where we are now, it is something worth noting. It is something that I'm very proud of, and it is something everyone should take pride in, from the students in our audience to the trustees that I'm addressing now. Since our last renewal, we have been in a continuous state of progression in terms of academics as well. The time you granted us was not taken for granted. And we have worked actively to improve our school and to cultivate a true environmental science-based curriculum. This has been and continues to be due to collaboration, teamwork, and professional development. For example, as a staff, we spent a week at the Lawrence Hall of Science learning the ins and outs of the Seeds of Science Roots of Reading program. It's a new science-based, hands-on curriculum that fits the essence of Yes Charter like the proverbial glove. Last year, I taught two Seeds units, Rock Transformations and Plate Tectonics. Students responded very well and found that it was awfully rewarding to be involved and play a part as an architect of their own understanding. Furthermore, I was also sent to learn from John Muir Laws, author, scientist, and artist. I spent another week camping in the beautiful Sierra Buttes, learning the art of observation, scientific illustration, and journaling. Professionally, it was one of the greatest teaching and learning experiences of my life. For the past year, I have passed on this incredible knowledge, this appreciation for the environment that surrounds us, from the little details to the grand, to the students of Yes Charter through my scientific illustration and journaling elective. Yes Charter Academy has come a long way since my first days on campus. We have avoided stagnation and embraced the importance of growth and evolution, but we still have a ways to go. I only hope that our excellent and dedicated staff, our wonderful parents, and our energetic student body can continue, as Mrs. Markle said earlier, working for the betterment of our children. I'd like to thank you for your time and the consideration of our petition. And Mr. Danable and Mr. Fury, I'd like to thank you for coming and visiting us and offer an open invitation to anyone to come by and see what we're doing.
Okay, next is Anthony Romeo.
Wow, how do you follow that? The reason I wanted to come up and speak with you is I think I offer a fresh perspective of the Yes Charter Academy. My family's a military one, and we just got here in July. And of course, before we came out here, one of our big worries was the educational program and the quality in the curriculum that they would experience here in California. As the farthest west we'd ever lived was Florida. So, with that, there were three kind of things I really wanted to cover. One was the quality of the Yes Charter Academy as I've witnessed it. Second is our shared ethos and what that means to us and how that fits into our community. And finally, kind of hit on the parental and community support that we have. Something special is going on here, and I really want to bring that to light. Okay, with that, when we speak about quality, you know, the numbers speak for themselves. Board scores reaching, or testing scores reaching the mid-700s, over 100 students. And what that really means to the small rural community, the road I live on, three of the four families with children that are eligible to go to the Yes Charter School in those ages currently go to the school. And the fourth I just spoke with this weekend, they're going to be taking a tour this coming week. And I believe that's going to make it four for four. Very, very kind of interesting, very startling numbers. Okay, with that, the reason that they're joining, the reason why so many folks are those ethos, the things that we believe in, the things that we understand the importance of the environment. And kind of in preparing for this little speech, if you will, I read your own mission statement, along with that your vision statement and your value statements. And one of the biggest things I saw that popped right out was a value statement where you speak about social responsibility, striking that balance between the economy and the ecosystem. That's what we're all about. We're capturing that. And our families, obviously, are very concerned with these as we move on as a nation. And also, in your mission statement, you speak about the most appropriate educational opportunities. Here's exactly what we're doing. Our school is leveraging these environmental sciences opportunities to teach the curriculum of the state. And we're doing it awfully successfully. And, of course, I always like to bring up the fact that some people think that these charter schools are expensive. And if anyone thinks education is expensive, I always tell them, try ignorance. You'll see expensive. Okay, so finally I want to talk a little bit about the parental community support. So with that, I just want to kind of rewind to Saturday. Saturday, between the hours of 5 and 9 p.m., the school was represented at the El Coop Center, preparing meals, busing tables, and selling baked goods for the school. Then we move on to Sunday morning. Mr. Swindle and I, while the national championship games were going on, spent 3 hours cutting firewood and stacking firewood for the school so that it can be auctioned off and it can be used to buy books and buy supplies for our students. So with that, I think we pretty much just covered what I want to talk about, the fact that a new, fresh set of eyes on this, that we obviously, the quality speaks for itself, the number speaks for itself, the ethos that this school shares with the community, with this board, and with our nation, and finally that parental support and community support we have. It's really phenomenal. Thank you.
Okay, next is Janice Jenkins.
Good evening. My name is Janice, and our family has been involved with Yes Charter Academy since its inception. I have been a parent, an employee, and a volunteer for these last 4 years. I have seen Yes Charter Academy grow from an idea to a reality. The reality has been set these last 2 years by the commitment and dedication of the staff and administration, especially our principal, Kathy Smith. The love of teaching children comes first. The building has been painted inside and out, and the outdoor campus has a beautiful 27 raised bed garden. I have personally worked with all ages of the children in the garden. The change that comes over them while working the soil is really remarkable, especially with the older children. One young man, sporting a mohawk, was helping me with some planting, expressed his love of plants, and his favorite thing to do is to help his grandmother with the garden. How great it was, he said, to do this at school. I have seen my child grow and prosper at this school. He has not only had an academic education, but a social education, learning to accept others and to love the younger members of the school. Even though my son is now in those difficult years of middle school, he comes home nearly every day happy. I attribute a lot of that to the administration and to his teacher, Adam Zavorkian, who has a very kind and patient way with children of that age group. Thank you so much for supporting our school these last few years. I don't think you will be disappointed to give us 5 more years. Thank you.
Hey, Sam Jenkins.
Hello, my name is Sam Jenkins, and I would like to thank the members of the Marysville School Board for allowing me to speak to you this evening. This is the second time I've spoken to the board. 2 years ago, I introduced the school's garden vegetables when we presented the members of the board with some vegetable bouquets. The bouquets made everyone smile. Since then, the garden has helped feed our students at lunch. Some of our 27 raised beds are salad greens for our school. We now have a California certified master gardener supervising our program. She gives lectures, but my favorite time is when we get a chance to go outside, get our hands in the dirt, and see how things grow. I especially like to eat the growing vegetables, and our lunches are really great too. I've been at Yes Charter Academy ever since it was started when I was in third grade. Now I'm a seventh grader. To me, when the school opened, it was almost like an amateur production, but in the last 2 years, since Mrs. Smith became our principal, I've seen the school really evolve into something special. Our teachers work together like a team. Our enrichment program has electives now, and I've really enjoyed my elective, which is helping teach the younger students. I think I'd like to be a teacher someday. This year, I've heard that our STAR test scores really improved last spring. My teachers have been the best. They help me when I've got difficulties, they explain things clearly, and they give me whatever attention I need to do my work right. They seem like friends of mine. Last year, Mr. Lacoste helped his 5th and 6th grade class raise enough money to pay for everyone in his class to attend the Shady Creek Outdoor School for a week. It was one of the best weeks I've ever had. I learned about edible and inedible plants, water creatures, and I met two really cool nature teachers called Sasquatch and Yeti. Those guys are really huge. I'm just 13, and I don't know a lot about how you should run a school, but I can tell you this. Yes feels like a second home to me. The teachers are like friends, the school is run smoothly, and everything has been painted and cleaned, and I really like to go there. I appreciate your support, and I hope it can continue.
Okay, that was the last card I had. Are there any other comments? The public hearing's still open. Comments from board members? Any other comments? Please come up to the mic if you have comments.
Ms. Todd, Glenn, members of the other board, the rest of the board, my name is Alan Miners, and I am a parent and a grandparent of three children still attending this school. And I can honestly say that I think you heard it the last time. I was reluctant to let my children attend the school when it first opened. When I spoke last time, I told you nothing but praise as to what I had seen from the inception of my kids going to the school. As to what I say today, this school, I can tell you honestly, I have been to schools throughout the world. I am a GI brat who followed my father around the Air Force for many, many years, attending many, many different schools. I'm a retired Air Force individual myself. My children have attended many different schools. And this school, Yes Charter, I can tell you the teachers accept each and every one of us parents and grandparents of the children that attend as not parents or grandparents, but as family members of the school. And I can honestly tell you that is a wonderful feeling. Now, I can say that I hope that each and every one of you board members take into consideration that when you vote to give the opportunity to have this school be afforded another 5 years, I hope that you don't take it as if it is a school that is, I can't even think of the word right now, but I hope you don't think that they are trying to outdo other schools within the valley of Marysville Joint Unified, but look at them as giving you the opportunity keep your classrooms a little lower so that the students can learn a little more one-on-one. That probably is one of the greatest aspects of this school right here. They've got just over 100 students. They've got grades 1 through 8. You do the numbers. Student to teacher is very low. To me, that is one of the most important aspects of teaching children. When you can take them outside to learn how to count, how to read, and how to nurture animals and vegetables, versus coming down into a valley school where you are taught everything within this classroom, and you might be lucky to have a field trip once or twice a year. These kids are on a field trip nearly every day. Obviously, this is not a practice speech. It's totally impromptu. I hope I didn't make a fool of myself. I hope I helped you make a decision to have this school be afforded another 5 years. Thank you.
Good evening. Before I address you all, please excuse my cough. I would like to really applaud and recognize all of the students here who spent a full day in class, had a long drive down here, have such consideration and respect for the speaking that's been going on, even though I'm sure much of it was over your heads in the beginning. So I would really like us all to applaud the students. I would also like to thank the dedicated, committed parents who are willing to bring them down and to offer students tonight. So thank you. I don't generally volunteer to speak at public meetings. I do much better speaking in rhyme to little people under 4 feet tall. I'm the TKK teacher at Yuba Charter, and this is my first year teaching there. So I hope you will bear with me as I stumble through. There are two things that I hold very near and dear that attracted me to Yes Charter. One is I have a passion for teaching children, and secondly, I have a passion for bringing children out into the natural world. And Yes Charter does both of those. I love having the children be able to have a firsthand experience and to really learn and enjoy our natural, beautiful planet. To paraphrase one of my heroes, John Muir, it is by going out that I found my way back to myself. This has always been true for me. I have found that the more I am out in nature, the more true I have become to myself and the more deeply I have come to know myself. I don't think that in the mainstream world, children are given so many indications of who they're supposed to be and what is appropriate and what is not. But in nature, there is no one telling you what is right or wrong. They can find out for themselves. I deeply believe that children need time in the presence of wildness. They need wild places to vision, to dream, to experience. Our vision, in part, at Yes Charter, is to provide such opportunities for the children we serve. I have worked at Yes Charter now for 5 months. On a daily basis, I have witnessed the dedication, passion, commitment of the staff, the teachers, the board members, the parents. I have been struck by the continuous hard work and sense of care displayed and shown to the students. I see this also reflected in the students' work. I think care is a very important word. It is something that I think we need more of in our culture these days. We need to learn to care for our environment, to care for each other, and to care for ourselves in a less superficial, more natural way. The country also needs young people with the knowledge of science and the ability to inquire, investigate, and think in new and innovative ways. For these reasons, I believe that Yes Charter to be a very valuable asset to the district and to the community. When I first came to Yes Charter, I was hoping for a job, but what I really found was a sense of community. I ask you please to continue support for this community and this school. Thank you.
Can you please give us your name for the record? Thank you. Anybody else? Okay, if there are no other comments, I need a motion to close the public hearing.
Motion to close.
Motion by Mr. Harris. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Rex. And all those in favor?
Aye.
7 yes. Okay, we'll move on to Board of Trustees. Number 1, Resolution 2012-1321. Excuse board members' attendance at meeting of the Board of Trustees.
Motion to approve.
Motion by Mr. Harris. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Danable. All those in favor?
Aye.
6 yes. Abstentions?
Aye.
1 Mr. Crawford abstains. Business Services, number 1, approved purchase of a plus or minus 11.7 acre site known as Wheeler Ranch. Mr. Allgaier?
Thank you. Good evening. This, as Mr. Boom addressed or announced, this is for the purchase of what we refer to as the Wheeler Ranch site. It's 11.73 acres. As it says in the agenda briefing, it is already bounded on two sides by street and sidewalk curb and gutter improvements, one side by a OPUD park, and to the north by an open field that is mapped for future homes. I am recommending purchasing the site. I believe the district will ultimately need the site for an elementary school, and the stated price of $410,000 is, by historical standards, a very good price. The seller has not signed the purchase and sale agreement, so the board's action this evening of approving this agreement would be subject to seller ultimately signing the agreement. And be happy to answer any questions. I know we've talked about this several times in closed session, so if there are any questions.
Any questions?
Good work, Mark. I know we've been after this site for a long time, so just want to say, you know, I read your review, and okay. Thanks for the hard work and putting it up. It's been a long time coming.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Comments? Is there a motion?
I'll move to approve.
Motion by Mr. Rex. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Harris. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
5 yes. Opposed?
No.
2 Mr. Miller and Mr. Danable oppose. Okay. Business Services, number 2, update on the 2013-14 governor's proposed budget. Mr. Allgaier.
This ought to be enlightening.
Are we up? Thank you. Thank you. This evening we have a number of slides, as you can see, prepared by School Services California. 4 of us went to their workshop last week, Gay, Romero, Penny, and myself. We get a binder. So we each have a binder. If any of the board members would actually like to come in and look at the entire binder, that's certainly something we can arrange. So these are, again, School Services slides out of the binder, and they're selected slides to try and keep presentation as short as possible. As you know, the governor each year in January proposes the next year budget. This is Jerry Brown's proposal for 13-14. None of this has the effect of law. It all has to be approved by the legislature, which can ultimately adopt his proposals, not adopt them, adopt some of them, change them, and ultimately sometime in the summer we would have an approved state budget. The arrows are mine, simply to highlight key points on each slide. You've heard a lot about the revenue limit deficit. It does not change. It's still a little over 22%, which is still terrible. But for the first time since 07-08, it has not gone up. The Legislative Analyst's Office is projecting increases in Prop 98 funding, or I don't want to say primarily, but significantly because of the passage of Proposition 30. But again, just because the Prop 98 guarantee goes up doesn't mean schools will receive additional funding. We are still receiving about 10% less than we did in 07-08. This is with the governor's proposals. And again, deficit factor of 20% because of past cuts and unpaid COLAs. Pent-up demand for these dollars, of course, everybody will want some. Here is the change in a per ADA bar chart. And you can see 08, 09, 09, 10 were, of course, the big years with the big cuts. But if you look at those past 5 or 6 years, you'll see why the funding overall is still down about 10%. California is now more heavily reliant than ever on personal income tax, and really those income taxes are heavily reliant on a select few. And we continue to, state budget and schools continue to be dependent on the well-being of those wealthy few and their ability to pay state income tax. While Jerry's proposals do reduce what he refers to as the wall of debt, there's still $35 billion left that he has not yet addressed. In the last really good year, 0001, when Gray Davis was governor, he gave away the store. And, of course, so did everybody else. You've heard me say for a long time, we still suffer from what happened at that time. Prop 98 funding, as you know, sometimes that doesn't necessarily generate more dollars for schools. But this is a nice bar chart showing we're basically back to where we were in terms of Prop 98 in 07-08. Now, the governor has made several proposals. One is he uses $1.8 billion of the new Prop 98 money to reduce his inter-year cash flow deferrals. You've heard me talk about that multiple times. And unfortunately, there's still $5.6 billion left, which means, in simple terms, Prop 98 can grow another $5.6 billion, and we wouldn't see a penny of it because it could all go to reverse the rest of the deferrals. Now, these deferrals helped us in the past, even though we received huge cuts. Without the deferrals, the cuts would have been worse. Now, the downside to that is, as Prop 98 goes up, then some of the money gets diverted to reverse the deferrals and doesn't come to the schools as additional funding. His weighted student formula from last year is essentially unchanged, but has been rechristened as the local control funding formula. I shouldn't say unchanged. There are some changes to it, but it's still, the concept's the same, and you'll see that in just a second. And he devotes $1.6 billion of the new money to fund that proposal. This is really, School Services refers to it as sweeping reform. He, in essence, is getting rid of revenue limits, which have been around since the mid-70s. So, really, there's no, it is sweeping. This is a major reform proposal that he has put forward. Totally changes the whole concept of revenue limits into this LCFF. While the governor does not make a direct reference to a statutory COLA, a 1.65 COLA is basically built in to his proposal. And the revenue limit deficit remains at its 22% deficit factor. Now, 1.65% COLA for an average unified school district generates about $111 per ADA, not per enrollment, per ADA. You can see statewide ADA is funded, but it's minuscule. Out of about 6 million ADA, that's the governor's projection for increase. And the bar chart with the deficit factor, so the good news is it didn't go up. The bad news is it didn't go down. If you remember this slide, if Prop 30 failed, the revenue limit deficit, I think, jumped to around 28%. So a little good news from the passage of Prop 30, at least the deficit factor didn't increase. His LCFF would also replace most categorical funding, including K-3 CSR and EIA. Two of probably the only major state categorical funds that were able to be swept and the legislature continued to protect them. Under Jerry's proposal, those two funding sources cease to exist. They get rolled into his funding formula and become unrestricted dollars. And you'll see this in a graph form. So his proposal, this is really it in a nutshell. So you get rid of revenue limits, and now you're funded on these grade span grants per ADA, which is essentially akin to the old revenue limit, but subdivided into grade groupings. As you can see, as the older students are funded at higher rates than some of the younger students, but then when you throw in CSR to the K-3, they actually, K-3 then gets funded at a higher rate than any group except for the 9-12 group. Then, kind of the crux of his proposal, then you get a 35% bonus based on your percentage of English language learners, free and reduced meals, and foster youth, unduplicated. So you don't get to count an English language learner who's free and reduced as two, that's one. So for all of those students in your district on a percentage basis, you would get a 35% increase of the base amount based on your percentage of those categories. Now, based on history, I'm guessing we'd be around 70%. So we would get the first 35% increase, and then the second 35% increase only applies to those students that exceed 50%. So we'd get that bonus for 50 through 70%. That is a significant attempt by the governor to serve students in those populations, again, the English language learners and the free and reduced price meals. But don't forget, you lose your K-3 CSR funding and you lose your EIA funding because that's been rolled into the base amount. Certain things are, of course, exempt: special ed, child nutrition, QEIA, and ACES. Remember, the governor can only legislate state funds. This doesn't apply to federal funding. This doesn't apply to Title I, for example. That's federally funded, not part of the governor's proposal. He can't do anything about that. Transportation continues to be a separate add-on for the time being. And this is all phased in over 7 years. And so, okay, the question is, why is it phased in over 7 years? Because the estimated total cost is $15 billion. And he proposes $1.6 billion in 13-14 to start the implementation. Obviously, that gives you a proration factor of around 10%. the state has not produced any good, solid information yet so that we can calculate this. And this is said a different way: insufficient details to currently allow a school district to determine its funding under the LCFF for 13-14 or any year thereafter. We can estimate it. We're working on some estimates now. Don't have them ready quite yet, but they would be estimates. Again, K3 CSR gets folded into the base amount and is reset at 24-1, but is not fully implemented until the year 2021, the seventh year. Adult education is shifted from K-12 to the community colleges effective 13-14. In essence, K-12 adult education programs cease to exist. All the responsibility shifts to the community colleges. Collective bargaining issues, COLA is small, restoration of the deficit factor is meager. However, there is a COLA, and again, there is money proposed by the governor to fund his new proposal, which again, if the legislature doesn't implement, then that funding would be available to be reappropriated or approved by the legislature in some other form. Now, that ends the school services slides. I wanted to put up a couple slides for the board. These were slides from first interim. No changes were made to these slides. Now that you've seen some basic information on the governor's proposal, 12-13, we're really still basically at break even if all groups agreed to the 1.64. One group has not agreed to it. The other groups have agreed and have been paid. The estimated cost for the year is, as you can see, is $750,000. Estimated year-end budget savings, based on this projection, we deficit spend, but not by a significant amount. Then into 13-14 and 14-15, you can see the picture improves a little because we built in COLAs in those 2 years in our multi-year projection, but we didn't build in any collective bargaining outcome. We did include step and column, and that's why you'll see the increase-decrease for salaries and benefits is mainly due to the step and column costs. So, to repeat, we assumed a COLA of 2% for 13-14 for this multi-year projection, and depending on ultimately what the legislature does, then we'll have to modify our multi-year projections accordingly. Don't forget that this is the list of money that we've flex transferred or swept, $3.7 million. In essence, these are all cuts because all these programs don't exist anymore. This money has been used for a number of years to offset the cuts in the revenue limit. So we had approximately $3.7 million in cuts due to flex transfers, and then we had approximately $6.3 million in cuts, other cuts. And this is, again, you've seen the slide before, and this is the summation of all the cuts over the past 4 or 5 years, total about $10 million worth of cuts. And the last slide is simply the same bar chart you've seen before, which is associated with this slide right here. So again, in quick summary, the governor has proposed a COLA. However, he's wrapped it into his new funding formula proposal, which also has some additional funding attached to it. Be very interesting now to see all the interest groups come out with the political process this spring and lobby for their pet programs and projects that they believe should be treated better than the governor has treated them, and of course ultimately see what the legislature approves. The legislature, again, by law, must pass a budget in June. However, they seldom do that. Though they did last year, but their track record over the past 10-15 years isn't very good. And we have to adopt our budget by the end of June, whether the state adopts their budget or not. So the next real update will be second interim, unless something really interesting happens before March. Questions?
No questions or comments.
Correct. The governor, a couple significant things. The governor, as Mr. White said, the governor did not propose any mid-year cuts this year. That's been kind of a specter behind us for the last several years. There were no mid-year cuts proposed for 12-13. There's no question that the Prop 98 guarantee has increased, primarily due to the passage of Proposition 30. So there is money available. Exactly how it's distributed is what, of course, we only guess at until the legislature actually acts. Again, the governor proposed a 1.65 COLA and some additional funding as wrapped into his new funding formula.
But Prop 30 goes into the general fund, is that correct?
Yes.
And they can use it any way they so desire, is that correct?
Well, they've manipulated proposition whatever it is, I've totally lost track, for a number of years.
In other words, they can put it into their fast rail going from nowhere to nowhere if they so desire, is that correct?
Well, I won't comment on the high-speed rail comment, but I've lost the slide. Not without manipulating proposition. Oh God, 38, 98. Yeah, just totally drew a blank on that. Without manipulating Prop 98, they would have to suspend it or manipulate it again. They've manipulated it for years. It's going to be a little harder, in my opinion. The governor campaigned extensively that Proposition 30 was going to help schools. And to not give us something, I think, is unlikely politically. Now, the legislature is ruled by Democrats who come from the same party.
It's nice to see that they're streamlining and simplifying the process.
Not in the least.
Any other comments?
Yes, I would. Oh, excuse me.
I noticed that the governor is taking the adult education out of the districts and moving them to junior colleges. This is going to have a tremendous impact on our community, I think, because so many of them have depended over the years on us supplying, you know, the adult education requirements.
Correct, but he does propose some additional funding for the community colleges to perform those services. And fortunately for us, he holds K-12 harmless. In other words, we don't lose the funding we currently have swept for adult education. Under his funding formula, we would keep that.
And I would say for our community, we're very fortunate that we have Yuba College in our backyard. Other communities are not going to fare as well.
Any other comments or questions?
Yes, I was watching C-SPAN today. The senator was speaking on the last time they had a complete budget, and that was before the iPad was invented or released. And now we're looking at the state additional funding, June promises by the governor. You work so hard, the staff work so hard to get your budget in on time, and here we are waiting again. I've made a public comment, and I've talked to a lot of teachers that said they'd be rewarded and should be rewarded when if Prop 30 passed. Now it's limbo again, and it's a never ending. It's almost hypocritical. I don't know how long it's been from the iPad, but I know the inventor is no longer with us on this planet. When you say general fund, the governor controls the general fund with Prop 30 funds, can that be used for salaries, for anything, or just specifics? Or
you mean on a state level or by us?
State level.
Well, I think the short answer is yes, but again, they have to either manipulate Prop 98 and the total funding, which they've done, or they can suspend it with a two-thirds vote. If they suspend it, then they can do whatever they want.
Okay, so the governor could conceivably come out and do whatever he wants. And we're looking at a time frame now of June again.
Well, not without a two-thirds vote in the legislature.
Okay. Well, we've got that.
Well, but I find that happening. I think the odds of that happening are unlikely.
Okay.
Because of the campaign promises made with Proposition 30. Proposition 30, as I said all along, did not provide any additional funding for 1213. However, it is providing some funding for 1314.
Okay. Well, once again, I didn't mean to be critical of staff. It's just uncanny that the federal and state can just continue not to get the budgets done, to mislead all of us, to put it all on your shoulders, and then here we're waiting again.
Well, the days of the, you know, various agencies calculating the statutory COLA and you pretty much being able to rely on getting the statutory COLA, I think, ended in the 90s.
Thank you very much.
Any other questions or comments? Okay, that was an informational item only, so the meeting's adjourned.
Thank you.